The Sound of Hockey episode 256. We're calling this one the Ryan Donato episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
You tell me.
Fair enough. I was the one that wrote down Ryan Donato on the show notes, so I will do that. He scored a goal in his first game with the Chicago Blackhawks, and it happened to be the first point for Connor Bedard, who we've heard a lot about, and we're going to talk a little bit about him on this podcast episode. But Ryan Donato, we're big fans, and it's pretty cool to see him getting an opportunity on effectively what I think is their top line, right, with Bedard at center, Donato, and Taylor Hall.
So, Taylor Hall got hurt tonight, too.
Oh.
Day two.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know how bad, but he did not finish the game.
Little wrinkle in the conversation there.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah. That's okay. Well, we want to bring all the facts on Sound of Hockey. That's for sure. And I'm very happy to be here with you all. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the X, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL to Seattle on the X.
And Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on the X. I guess that's what we're doing now.
That was
3 for 3.
Consistent across the three of us. It was a triple X, if you will.
Yeah. It was.
Quick question.
A Vin Diesel of intros.
Quick question. I got that reference.
Quick question. I didn't get it, by the way. No surprise. How's your day going, Darren?
I feel like a million pucks. Not a million bucks. A million pucks. Just little black discs of rubber is what I feel like right now. Just no brain in my head.
What time did it start?
It started at 3:45 a.m. This is after 4 days of Vegas and all the things that go with Vegas. So I'm cooked. I'm real cooked. I've had a couple other nights where we've recorded podcasts over the years where I've felt really tired. I think this one is the worst I've felt for... recording a podcast, so just so you all know,
so you're bringing your A game.
You're getting the peak of podcasting professionalism, and
we're getting some takes.
The takes are going to be Luke at best. So, we have a review to share. It is actually an updated review. So remember the one that was like really well written about going into the breach and all that.
Yes.
In a veritable ocean of podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. So it says, I am Haxtall's Steely Resolve, the only podcast that really brings me crack in something or other. It says, updated review from October 5th. Gents, first, I want to commend you on the regular interviews with players, especially the recent one with Belmar, a.k.a. Belly, which I will now be screaming from the top of my lungs every game. Compared to their interviews post-game on YT, which I think is YouTube, they are more human, more relaxed, and more real. How are you going to continue to get these flashes of authenticity during the season? That's a great question.
It is a good question.
And it is a challenge, I will say, because we tried to figure some things out with players last year. Anything outside of just like regular media availability, it's pretty hard to arrange it.
And game days are challenging too, right?
Yes.
Morning skates are tough.
So it really needs to be a practice, which like they only practice so often. We need to have the equipment with us on that. It's just like there's a few moving parts to it. And sometimes you'll ask for a player and then that player will like leave the ice early and they'll sneak out before we're able to get in there. So things happen where sometimes you think you have it lined up. Last year I was doing a lot of like one-on-one interviews. Maybe this year, John, you and I can pop into practices more frequently.
I think we can. We'll try to make it work.
Yeah, Curtis, you're not invited.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's funny because Curtis, you've never been involved in a player interview, right? For the pod.
Not for the pod. Yeah, I've done the like post-game media availability.
Yeah, I feel bad. But like 3 is too many, I think, in those environments.
It feels like a little much, yeah. But maybe we could sub you in if John isn't available.
Right. Yeah.
It's possible.
But
it's
Darren's always required. That's kind of the tricky situation here.
Nobody else knows how to press or record on the recorder, so.
That's right.
That's true. It's very scary looking.
Yeah. Actually, we'll put a pin on that. It's going to be in the Patreon mailbag later.
Okay.
So
we'll put a pin
there in
it here.
Yeah.
If you're a member of the Patreon, you can hear it in the mailbag episode when John removes the pin.
Yeah.
Which will be a big moment, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's how we plan to continue that. It says, second, I have some ideas for some new segments for you to consider this season. First one, you ready? A weekly wager. Hosts make a $1 bet on a specific outcome for the next game.
I
love it.
Maybe not the next game, but a game in the next like 7 days. I like that a lot.
This week in Kraken history. Okay, a bit tongue-in-cheek, but seriously, I think people forget the insane ups and downs of each season, and it would be interesting to ghost race previous ones.
Okay, I'll take that one, too. Okay. Yeah.
Where are they now? News tidbits from previous Kraken players.
Oh, we like that.
That's a good one.
I'm not sure every week, but no. But like Ryan Donato,
but
right?
Very much yeah. in line with yeah. the Ryan Donato episode. Kraken karaoke. A specific, we're getting, now we get a little off the rails
okay,
here.
All right. No bad ideas. No bad ideas. Okay.
A specific song that best exemplifies a specific player's performance from the previous week. I have written and sung songs on this podcast in
the
past.
We got a franchise.
So it's not, that was, it was a banger. It was a banger.
Man, I still laugh about it yeah. to this day. Yeah.
It's not a bad idea. And then last one is, I think this one we're probably not going to do for the podcast, but maybe we could do a like a video thing. It says frame by frame, perhaps a bit challenging on the radio, but a frame by frame teardown of a specific play from the previous week and how representative it is or isn't of the team's strengths and weaknesses.
I would love to kind of get into video breakdowns, mm-hmm. To be honest. So I like, again, no bad ideas. It's got, that's a kind of heavy lift that we need to kind of dial in a bit, but yeah. I love it. Love the ideas.
Great ideas. Thank you for that. Thank yeah. you for the 5-star review. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on next week's show. I don't think I have anything else to add to that. But we do have... The brain isn't tying things together the way it normally does. So we do have a Patreon starting lineup, and we've been getting some negative feedback on this. So here's what we're going to do for this one is I'm going to change gears a little bit. I'm going to still introduce our starting lineup, but it's going to be in the tone of you're the PA announcer. And by you, I mean I am the PA announcer announcing the visiting team. So we'll take it from there at left wing. Zachary M. Boo. At center, boo. Michelle. At right wing, Guru
boo.
Nation.
Boo.
At left defense, Aaron B.
Hate that guy.
At right defense, Andrew S.
Boo.
And in
boo.
Goal, Carrie Ann A.
Boo. Man, this is such a ridiculous.
We appreciate all of you.
We do love you.
I promise we won't do it forever.
We are theoretically contractually obligated to do that because that is one of the benefits of those tears.
You get recognized. Now, we didn't say that you were going to get booed.
That was just a fun little extra for
right.
you.
Yeah,
so
bonus.
And if you got booed, do know that it's not personal. That's entirely just a joke. So in case that wasn't clear. It probably was
unless
clear,
for but, you are listening right now.
We really appreciate you we being do. A member of our Patreon family.
Still humbling to
let's,
see.
Yeah, let's get it. Into our actual show here. So actually, we're not going to do that yet. We're going to talk a little bit about this trip that John and I just went on to Las Vegas, which was, like I said, it was 4 days for me. And I've generally, as I've gotten like older, I've found myself in Vegas more frequently than I want. Like, it's not my favorite place to go at all, but I seem to end up going there like at least once a year for some reason. I have a conference, I have a game to cover, I have something. Like, I end up going there for many different reasons. And on this particular one, I had, and I think I even talked about this maybe on the podcast, but these buddies that I was friends with from college and I haven't seen in 15 years, like, I somehow got connected into this group and they were going this weekend. So I flew in Saturday morning. You know, it was the 6 a.m. flight out of Seattle. So I slept like 3 hours before that one. And then we were out until 3 or 4 in the morning that night going to the Steve Aoki concert at Omnia, which was completely overwhelming. And then Sunday, that was Saturday night. Sunday, we did like a comedy show and a dinner. And then we went gambling and again got back like 3 in the morning. And then Monday, they all left and I was just like out wandering Las Vegas by myself. And then John shows up and we went out until like 3 in the morning. And then,
well, and like, I'm not a big late night guy to yeah. be clear. Yeah. And I think Darren, you're like, oh yeah, probably a mellow night. I'm pretty much partied out. I think yeah. that was the text message yeah. before I got on my plane. I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'm like, I just want to eat. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
and then, so I truly did not do any kind of partying, but still just like the circumstances of the game. And I then got food after the game. And then I finally laid down to go to bed at like 1. Somebody in the room was sawing logs.
And that then is uncalled for.
And then my alarm went off at 3:45 again to go catch a 6 a.m. flight. So like I said, I'm cooked. It's a good problem to have. I know, getting to go and do those things. It was super, super fun. But I don't want to do it again for quite a while because I'm really tired. But I don't know if I've made that clear that I'm tired.
Oh, are you tired?
Yeah. Should I tell a story? I have one story I could tell.
Go ahead.
Okay.
There are a couple of stories that you won't tell.
Yeah, there were some.
Nothing too.
What happens in Vegas? You know what they say.
I know, but
yeah,
you clean living. Let's yeah, be exactly. clear here.
You're right. You're right. But seriously, if you run into me, ask me about the good stories.
Yeah, he'll be eager to share. Just
no,
so you know.
I'm kidding. Don't ask me about the good stories. I'm just kidding. So the one I'll share though is me and like the buddies, we all went to the pool at MGM Grand. That's where we were staying for the first part of the trip, and they have a lazy river. Now MGM Grand has instituted a BYO tube policy. And so they don't have
what if
any
it's COVID related.
There's, yeah, I bet that's what they're trying to do, right? So the only option for getting a tube is you have to purchase your own tube for $35. Okay. One person from our group bought a tube, and then the rest of us just walked around the lazy river, which is not quite as enjoyable. So we did a lap around the lazy river. We're standing in like the actual pool part. The one guy is floating in his tube. And I noticed that there was a tube just sitting up on the side. And I was like, oh, that's pretty trusting to just leave that sitting there. And sure enough, 5 minutes later, this woman comes up to us. She's like, hey, is that my tube? The one that the guy was in. And we're like, no. And I was like, oh, is yours the one sitting on the side over there? Because I did actually notice that there is one just sitting there, but I didn't see anyone take it. And she's like, oh, you're not lying to me, are you? And we're like, no, we didn't steal your tube. Like, right. Yeah. It was just kind of weird. But then we had like a nice friendly conversation or whatever. And she left and went, I don't know, she went like beat some people up to get her tube back or what. And then, so then we're going to do another lap. And I'm like, well, I don't want to just walk around again. So I asked some people on the side that were just sitting there with their tube. I was like, would you mind if I borrow your tube for one lap around the lazy river? She's like, you promise to bring it back? I'm like, I absolutely promise. I have no benefit in taking your tube. And so she's like, okay, you can take it. So I do my ride around the lazy river and I'm almost back. And this woman pops up next to me again. She's like, now you stole somebody's tube, didn't you? That's somebody else's tube and you stole it. And I was like, no, I didn't steal it. And I thought she was joking because we had just had a pretty friendly conversation. And so I didn't really think anything of it. And so I get back, I hand the tube back over to the other people that loaned it to me very nicely. And this woman comes back to me again. She goes, I owe you an apology. When I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I really thought you had, I was like, you were seriously accusing me of stealing an inner tube? And that's my story. So that one didn't hit as hard as I thought it would. I thought that was a funnier story.
I like the
John
honesty.
John had already heard it too. Yeah. So.
So you didn't get much reaction from me.
No, you were
the second time.
Like pulling data or something.
She was just gonna make a citizen's arrest. I support her.
It was very strange. I mean, I guess if you're really suspicious of somebody and you suddenly see them riding on an inner tube that they didn't previously have, I get why you would be questioning it. I really do. But I don't know. I mean, we were eight dudes in our mid-30s in a, you know, like, are we gonna steal an inner tube? Like, I don't know. Although, to be fair, I guess somebody did steal her inner tube. So that is accurate. It was
a tough day for her.
Yeah. No more Vegas talk, except for when we get back to Vegas talk in a minute. Let's go down on the farm. Moo. The Coachella Valley Firebirds had their first preseason. Oh, no, they didn't, because it got canceled. For what reason, John?
Apparently, there was a power outage in the neighborhood or the area where they're located. So literally, I think people were in the stands, and then they had a power outage. So kind of a crappy way to start the preseason. But note that their actual season kicks off this Friday. So should be fun. I know one person in here is pretty excited to watch some prospects.
And it's not me or John.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm moderately excited, but not very excited.
Right. I'd put myself in that category as well.
No, I mean, just to fill in everyone at home, it's really the first year that a wave of Kraken prospects, drafted prospects, are going to be with the Firebirds. So it's just a lot of players that the team has invested in. It'll be interesting to see how the season goes down there.
Mm-hmm. What do you have against Ty Cartier, by the way?
Nothing. Big fan.
Well, he was on Coachella last year.
Yeah, not a drafted prospect, semantics wise.
Oh.
So I guess he doesn't matter.
Man.
No. But that's kind of precisely my point. Like last year, I enjoyed watching the games for Ty Cartier. This year, there's like, you know, six or nine of them. So.
All right. For this episode, I'm going to award points to who has the best. Like if you have a good argument,
burn.
Right? Or yeah. Something where you really like, throw it back in somebody's face. So Curtis, you got 1 point. Congratulations. You're on the board.
I
like this tired Darren. The point system's perfect, Darren.
It was pretty solid.
Solid. Okay.
Yeah. They're throwing it back at you because you said not a drafted prospect, and that was what he was talking about. It was drafted prospects. So speaking of drafted prospects, Jagger Firkus is off to quite a hot start. Curtis, do you happen to know what he's been up to?
Yeah, through six games with Moose Jaw in the WHL, he has 4 goals, 8 assists. Pretty hot start there.
Which is great. I do wonder a little bit, you know, from watching him in the training camp, he didn't do too many things this time. Like last time that I saw him, he really did several things where I was like, whoa, that was really impressive, right? He had some sick move or he's got a huge shot for his size, you know, but like when he got out for preseason games, he wasn't all that noticeable. So I wonder if he takes a big step here during this is a 19-year-old season, right? When he's supposed to be the top player. If he takes a big step during this season, I think it's a big year for him in that regard.
Yeah, I think it is. I think he's still struggling with this, like just the size and physicality transition to the professional level. I mean, that's what we were seeing in the preseason, but you see what he's doing just in highlights at the CHL level, and the skill level is there. It's the question with him is, can he make that transition to pro physicality? And we will learn a little bit about that this year, but that's going to be an ongoing process. That'll be a couple years in the AHL after this before I think we really have an answer.
We have some shame from last week.
Shame.
Shame.
Shame. Shame.
Shame.
Oh, there's four.
Oh, I thought there was three.
I thought there were three.
Darren's out of it.
I am. So shame on me for a couple things. One of them is I said last week that hacienda means kitchen in Spanish. And as soon as I said that, and I was so confident in it, I was second guessing myself and I went home and looked it up and I was completely incorrect. So an hacienda is like a villa or a ranch type of a thing, or like a big like plantation type of farm.
An estate.
You're right. Yeah. Cocina is kitchen. And I think what I was doing was I was conflating horno, which is an oven, with cocina, and I put them together and somehow that put hacienda in my brain.
Yeah, it's so easy to mix those up. Yeah.
Well, and there's a lot of restaurants, right, that have hacienda in the title.
Fair enough. Shame on you.
Yeah. Disappointed in myself. I once considered myself fluent in Spanish. So.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I've lost a lot of that.
Yeah, sounds like
as we can see here. So. Yeah, and the other piece of shame, which is related to our next topic, which is Kraken roster talk, was me with the very hot take, as if it came hot out of the Orno, that Riker Evans was going to make the team out of camp, and he obviously did not do that. But man, I think he got really close. And in retrospect, it's funny because I wrote that story where I was like, here's my prediction. I think he's making it impossible for them to send him down. And then he made some pretty glaring mistakes right after that, you know, and you guys called it out because we talked about it on the podcast after I had written the story. And in between then, I think there was a preseason game too. And there were just some things where it's like, all right, defensively, I don't think that Haxtell is going to trust him yet.
Yeah. He did play in two preseason games after you wrote that story. And I think they were his weakest of the preseason. Had some defensive breakdowns. So I'll give you that one. I'll throw in a little just bonus shame of myself that probably no one picked up on except for me.
Sure.
I called James Higgins Michael Higgins last week. Do you guys know who James Higgins is?
Nope, and I don't remember you saying that.
The 2025 prospect?
Yep. 2025 potential first-round pick.
That's unbelievable.
What's worse about it?
How do you get that?
Your point has been taken back. Back 0-0.
What's worse about it is that James Higgins' brother is Michael Higgins, and they're both going to Boston College, but James Higgins is the one who's probably going to go.
I bet that's been eating at you all week.
It annoyed me.
Yeah.
Probably no
I'm sure a lot of people called you out on that too.
I mean, as long as I'm on the shame train, I also said Devin Shore was going to make the team. That didn't happen. Joey Decord and Ty Cartier did make it. We had that right, but I don't think those were very hot
should
takes.
Should we put a pin in Devin Shore being on the team?
Maybe.
Should we put a pin in that for
there,
a moment?
There could be a need.
Or John Hayden.
Yeah, or John Hayden. Yeah.
Let's put a pin in both.
But both Chris Drieger, John Hayden, and then also obviously Devin Shore got sent down to Coachella. They all cleared waivers. They all stayed with the team. Yeah. And yes, Cole Lind, too. I don't know if we mentioned
Cole Lind, Cale Fleury. Yep. No waiver claims from the Kraken this
right.
year.
And they started the season with 22 players on their roster. So as much as we were like, oh, who's the last guy going to be? It wouldn't make sense to keep this guy because he's young. He should play and this and that. And they just didn't even keep the full number. So
right. We were all kind of going through mental gymnastics to think, you know, what's the best use of the 23rd player? Is mm-hmm. is it an eighth defenseman? Is it a, you know, 14th forward? And really, I think practically speaking, it ends up being whatever your injury situation is, you're covering for that with your 23rd player. And I think that's the way the team views it. No one really distinguished themselves as like clearly head and shoulders above that pack of kind of like Andrew Podorolski, Devin Shore, John Hayden. They were all kind of in the same class. So I think from the team's perspective, it was put these guys through waivers. If they all clear, we can move players in and out as needed should injuries come along. And you accrue some extra cap space in the meantime while you're only carrying 22 players.
And they did that quite a bit last year. They carried only 22 players for a bit they picked up Megna. In early February or whatever.
Correct, so. Correct. There was a stretch there, at least a month or so, where they were going with 22.
And I'll just kind of say your point again is that nobody really differentiated themselves enough to like justify staying there. I think the exception being Riker Evans probably played the closest to justifying a position, but because he's waiver exempt.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The playing time.
It makes all the sense in the world to have him go down. And the other thing too is they don't have a back-to-back until mid-November. So if they need him, they can get him.
And you know, I think
he's not that far away.
I think Ron Francis actually mentioned that in the press conference that it made it like there's no need to carry an extra player because you can get him on a flight right away. So I believe somebody said Joey Decord would be the second goalie before camp started, mm-hmm. right? Any ideas who that would be?
I think it was two of the three in the room.
Yeah, it was not me.
Okay.
I'm not good at math. Who would that be then?
I think you said it. Well, I said guarantee, like he's got the spot, and you're like, oh, I don't know.
Oh, so you're trying to take away from my take?
I was like.
I said it wasn't guaranteed. I wanted to see how they performed in camp,
and he performed better than guaranteed.
Well, if he didn't have a good camp, I don't think that was, there's no guarantee there.
The time, I said he's a lock.
Okay. So. All right. Well, congratulations then, John. Negative one for you also. Just because you made me feel
so ridiculous,
bad about
man.
It.
I'm just calling out something I nailed. Yeah.
And now we are going to talk about the Kraken at the Golden Knights in Las Vegas, which means, unfortunately, I'm back in Las Vegas again. I will never get out. But all this roster conversation may already be back in view. And by the time you hear this podcast, and this is probably going to come out like after tomorrow. We're recording on Wednesday night. It's probably going to come out Thursday after the game in Nashville. So we'll know if a roster move is made. But Brandon Tanev left the game in Vegas and did not return. And it did look like a non-zero thing. He got a pretty nasty hit from, well, we'll talk about this in Bad Boys coming up soon.
Another
from Brett Howden. And so he not only got hit on the head, but he also like twisted his leg underneath him. So there could be one or two injuries there. It did look pretty gnarly. Yeah. It was the opposite leg from what he tore his ACL in 2 years ago. I think that's worth commenting on. He got up on his own power, but did not come back to the game. So no surprise. Meanwhile, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare left the game for like a full period. I think he left kind of mid second period and then came back about mid third period after he blocked a shot with his hand. So he's also banged up. Good sign, obviously, that he came back to the game. You'd assume it's not anything too serious, but he missed time during the game. So
on the Tanev one, I saw the lower body thing in the replay mm-hmm. and so I was like keenly looking at that, at his legs, if he was favoring one or the other as he was getting off the ice. And I might have had a better angle from where I was sitting because I was in the stands, you were in the press box. And it didn't look like he was favoring anything on his either leg.
Yeah.
So I think the leg is fine. Of course, I'm speculating here, right. But I think the head injury is the thing that's a little bit more potential head injury, I should say.
Right. So either way, it didn't look great for Tanev, which means, I mean, now they don't have, you know, if he does need to miss more time than what he's already missed, they don't have an extra forward then, right? Because Ty Cartier draws in. He was the extra in Vegas. So now they would be going with no extra forward. So there could be a forward called up, theoretically, if he has to miss time.
Yeah, I think if looks like Tanev's going to miss more than a game, then they'll definitely call somebody up.
Right. So let's talk about the game aside from that. So disappointing 4-1 loss. Not a terrible effort. I thought they played okay. They made some pretty glaring defensive mistakes, though. I think if you look at all three of the goals, there is like a pretty obvious like defensive screw up. Brian Dumoulin kind of lost his guy on the first goal. Second goal, Brandon Tanev, I'm not exactly sure what he was trying to do there. He was trying to sweep the puck like behind the net, and Marchessault got a stick on it and just deflected it in. One of the strangest goals you can imagine. And then the third one, Vince Dunn was with Ivan Barbashev and just kind of like stopped skating for a second and gave him like a few feet of space. And then he went in on a partial breakaway and scored. So, yeah, all three of them, there's like a pretty obvious mess up there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And the Brandon Tanev one was particularly unfortunate, I thought, because it was, again, Brian Dumoulin and Justin Schultz on the ice, the D pair, as with the first goal for the second goal. They kind of lost a player in coverage in the slot. And Brandon Tanev, I thought, made a pretty nice defensive play, kind of coming back.
To help yeah.
And steal the puck. He was just a little loose with the puck, got off his stick. I mean, we see that with Brandon Tanev sometimes. He's not exactly like, you know, someone like Matty Beniers.
Not in terms much of a puck handler, is that what you're trying to say?
In terms of puck handling?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was going right towards his net. He's not the most secure puck handler. He lost it at the worst possible time. But what the shame about it was is that I thought he made a good play kind of covering for his D there. Mm. Just worst possible outcome.
Yeah. That was that. So other things that I think we want to talk about, though, are we kind of need to talk about the power play again, which is unfortunate. And I think it's funny because Dave Haxtell has kind of been defensive about it in the last couple of weeks. He says, literally after morning skate, he said people have been crapping all over our power play from last year, which I don't know who that. I mean, I wrote a story about the power play and what they could do to improve, and I thought it was very factual about, you know, they were 21st in the league last year. That just is what
and
it is.
And then I piled so, like, on with some data.
Yeah. Okay,
he was already kind of.
But it wasn't just us, obviously. Yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. I think there's other people that have been writing about it and talking about it and whatever.
Well, and I mean, if you're looking at last season, are you going to call them out for their 5-on-5 offense? They were number one in the league. I mean, so I think
looking at ways they can get better.
Better, I think everyone rightfully identified the power play. Maybe the coaching staff is a little too defensive about the fact that essentially 5-on-5 was great.
Yeah.
Do that again.
Yeah.
But the power play needs to improve. Anyway.
But, I mean, then, of course, they go out. They have plenty of power play opportunity, and they don't score, including a 5-minute power play after Tanev got his head shot. So,
in the third with, like, 10 minutes left.
Prime opportunity,
like,
right?
Critical,
like, they had to score. Yeah. Did not do it in 5 minutes. Had some good looks, but it's just, like, at some point, good looks don't get you very far, you know? So, now, to be fair, if you extrapolate that and you continue to have good looks across 10 games, and you know, then they will eventually start scoring in theory. But I don't know. I mean, is that how you felt about it? Like that they were getting looks or not really?
I thought they generated some.
They got some.
They
but
got.
It wasn't
they
like
generated some
pressure.
Shot quality. I think it's because they. There were some instances where they were chasing the puck. They were losing draws and chasing the puck. But I think they maintained zone time fairly well. But Vegas did a pretty good job of keeping them to the outside. They got in on a couple of occasions, but you would expect that. They had 11 minutes of man advantage time. Mm-hmm. 11 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was, if you look, I looked back at this, since the beginning of last season, there have been only 3 games out of 97, including the postseason, only 3 games where the Kraken had more than 10 minutes of man advantage time in any given game. One was Tuesday night against Vegas, and the other two, they scored goals in those games. So, I mean, you could say that this was the least productive, most disappointing power play effort going back to the beginning of last year,
mm-hmm.
Where they had so much ice time and couldn't convert. Yeah. I do think they generated some shot quality compared against those other two games that I just mentioned. It was relatively less than those two games. So again, for the amount of time they had on the ice, just not good enough by any measure.
So a couple things. I fundamentally agree with both of your guys' takes. But
thank you.
There was like you mentioned that there's a desire to change up the power play this year.
Yeah.
And that's what Hakstol kind of mentioned
yeah.
2 weeks ago or whatever. And you identified that in your piece. And that is definitely different. Their power play approach.
It does look different. Yeah.
And I think it takes time to kind
there's
of
a learning
like,
curve.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's some of that now. Yeah. And I did call it out to you guys that they did generate more shot opportunities, what I refer to as shot opportunities per 2 minutes, like mm-hmm. kind of like what you can expect on a 2 minute power play. They generated more shot opportunities in the game against Vegas than they did kind of
on average
in the prior season. So meaning there is some goodness there that they're generating shot opportunities. What I didn't like is I felt like there were too many somewhat blind passes or turnovers, and that could be Vegas being really good at reading kind of passing and passing lanes and anticipating where the Kraken are going. So that's what I kind of didn't like. I don't remember that as prominent last season in any kind of at any specific moment in the season. But again, I think that kind of takes with time. What I find interesting is that there is one of those power play units that does not have a center.
Hmm.
And so it's the Dunn, Tolvanen, Schwartz, Bjorkstrand, and Yamamoto line.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that kind of early on because somebody got Schwartz got bounced from the center. And I'm like, oh, wait.
Who's going to take the draw?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Like, why Schwartz
doesn't usually
taking
take draws.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah. It took me a while to realize that, even though that's been known for a while, or at least that's the mm-hmm. unit that they've been putting together. So I don't know how that kind of impacted their faceoff percentages on the power play.
Well,
but
the percentage wasn't very good when Maddie's line was out there either.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Put a stake in that.
Yeah,
last
week. The stake is in.
Remains in.
But Matty Beniers 3-for-13 in this one. Yeah. Alex Wenberg also had a rough game on the faceoff dot.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a good faceoff game.
Now, things that I think we should keep in mind here as we're really dissecting this first game of the year is that A, it's the first game of the year, and B,
thank you
it's against
for a reminder.
The defending yeah. Stanley Cup champions who, by the way, are really good. They are actually really, really good, and the Kraken are 1-8 against them all time. So they don't match up well at all against the Golden Knights. They're a good team. They got good goaltending. I am a little concerned if I'm going to share concern about anything from this game. I'm not getting all that worked up about the power play just because it wasn't like they didn't get any looks, right? I'm not worked up about Philip Grubauer. I thought he had a lot of good saves. The goals that went in weren't his fault. It was unfortunate the first shot of the game went in, but it's also like a backdoor tap-in off a 2-on-1, so it's like, how do you fault, you know? The thing I am just a little bit concerned about, though, is they've had, what is it, 3 games now between preseason and this game one where they've only scored 1 goal. 2 of those came against Jack Campbell, right? Didn't they only score 1 each in each of those
Sounds
games?
Right. Yeah.
2 of those came against Jack Campbell. This one came against Aiden Hill. And I feel like when a team struggles to score, it feels like every night it's like, oh man, great performance by the opposing goalie. But a lot of that is just that you struggle
I think
to score.
That's really premature.
I think so too.
Yeah.
But I'm just like a little bit concerned about it because I'm just a little bit concerned. That's all.
I see where you're coming from on that. And I also agree with you 100%. It's the first game. You shouldn't be essentially taking anything from the first game.
Okay, fine. Let's move on then.
No,
God.
We've got a podcast today and we got a podcast. That's what I say. We got one game. So let's overanalyze the heck out of it.
Yeah.
And my kind of over analysis of the first game is just, you know, a very mild, very low level concern about the integration of Brian Dumoulin into the defensive core.
Okay.
Just the combination of him and Schultz
didn't have the strongest night, right?
Yeah, just yeah. Again, one game. Let's give it months
against the defending champions.
Let's give it months of runway here. And I think they've earned that and we should give that. But for one night, there were some lapses in coverage that I wouldn't have expected necessarily from two veteran players who'd played together before. Now, again, first game, let's see how it goes. But I thought Brian Dumoulin in particular was a step slow on a couple occasions in his coverages, and it cost the team. If those opportunities hadn't gone in, you know, maybe I wouldn't be feeling the same way. So there's a one game sample size here. But it's just, you know, the first two goals, I think you can kind of look their way on both of those.
Let's call this the overreactions.
Overreaction segment.
Okay.
Because I want to have one as well.
You're going to also overreact.
Yeah, I want to overreact.
All right, so I overreacted to minimal goal scoring. You overreacted to the play of the third defense pairing. John, take it away.
Do you consider Dumoulin and Schultz the third pair?
I do.
I think so.
Versus Oleksiak and Borgen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always thought they were the third, but it's because Schultz at least has some offensive upside.
Yeah. I know. It's just how I see it.
Okay. Fair enough.
You know what? While you're making your hot take, I'm going to see who played more minutes.
He's going to check the database.
Go ahead.
So mine's not a hot take. It's more of an observation, not real concern. But I thought Burakovsky and Dunn did not look particularly sharp.
Okay.
Agree.
And that's maybe expected because they haven't been playing that much. Obviously, Burakovsky not coming back from the injury. It's not the injury. It's just the sharpness of a shot. Like, it just didn't feel the same. And I know he's always, like, holds on to the puck a little longer than maybe sometimes I wish, but I think that's what makes him a good player as well. And he only had one giveaway statistically, but I felt there was a couple other opportunities where what directly led to kind of a turnover. You know, and this is a slight get off my lawn. What's your take on Wennberg's penalty that he got called?
I don't think I even saw it.
Oh my God. It was such a great play.
Stick was on the puck and they called him for tripping, right?
Yeah.
And it seemed like maybe his body collided with the body of the player.
But after he touched the puck, that is not a trip.
I think so. I think that's right. On replay, I agreed with you live, just from the camera feed that I was watching live, it looked like a trip to me. But then when I saw the replay, I was like, oh, he's right on the puck. So I'm just wondering what the officials saw.
So it was in my corner. That's exactly where that play happened. And I noticed right away it was a great play.
Yeah.
So. All right, I have data for you.
Okay.
So as we're determining which of the defense pairings is the second and third pairing, I don't know if we can quite use this information as the end-all be-all of this is the second pair, this is the third pair, but of those four defensemen that we mentioned, the player that played the least on Tuesday was Brian Dumoulin with 15:19 of ice time.
Mm-hmm.
The third, or second to last, I guess is how I should describe that, was Justin Schultz at 16:22. Then it was in second place was Will Borgen at 16:47. And first place was Jamie Oleksiak with 18:33.
And Schultz gets power play time.
That's true.
And they had 11 minutes of power play time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a huge difference.
Do I give myself a point for that one?
No, you cannot award yourself any points.
Self-award. Okay.
And just fair come enough. Back to your point, John, I agree with you that Vince Dunn also looked a little off. You know, he's not just the missing the net from the slot three times.
Yeah.
Not just that. I mean, that certainly. Yeah. He did lead the team in ice time, I believe. I mean, it sounds like you have it up in front of you, but.
Because they had 11 minutes of power play time.
They threw him right back in there. They clearly thought he could handle it, but the rust seemed fairly evident to me. He had that one great rush on the power play where he kind of, his skating ability is still there and evident. But on the whole, I agree with you. So it looked a little rusty to me. Going back to your Andre Burakovsky point, I think there is something to this idea that the Matty Beniers line and the Yanni Gourde line, I mean in the greater Kraken community, have decided that those lines, quote unquote, work and need to stay together. And the coaching staff clearly, to some extent, agrees with that. And it feels to me like the Wennberg line with Jaden Schwartz and Andre Burakovsky hasn't really gelled. Even last season, there were times it looked good, but on the whole hasn't gelled as a unit to the same extent as those other two. And it seems to me like they're just necessarily a unit now because the top nine is fairly obvious on this team.
I think that's a pretty good observation because Schwartz usually looks good wherever he plays, honestly. Yeah. Like, he's not going to be a high-end guy, but he's a creator. He adds value to most lines, and when he plays with those guys, it's not as much probably. So
yeah, so I just wonder if there's something to maybe down the road, there's a little bit of shuffling that could get more out of Andrei Burakovsky. But I think you're right. In this specific game, it was first game, full regular season speed back. Let's give him some time.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. It didn't look quite right game one.
All right. Well, that's game one. Anything we didn't talk about there? Oh, the banner raising. What did you guys think about the slot machine?
You're the one that incited the internet community. So
I know. I thought it was pretty clever. Well, it was the intern that said it, but I told the intern to say, hey, that's pretty clever. Go ahead and tweet that. And the intern was like, okay, no problem. And I thought it was just like cooler than just raising it. You know, they had Mark Stone pulled the arm and had three Stanley Cups come up and then the banner went up.
To me, it felt a little cheesy at the time, but then I also realized that they actually have like a slot machine kind of animation that's kind of part of the normal game production.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, okay, it kind of, and obviously the slot machine being in Vegas, but it's better than like putting it on the ice and like, oh, just bring it up. Like, I thought that's not bad. I thought it was fine. Probably looked better from, because I had the side angle.
Mm-hmm. It looks bad.
It just didn't look as.
It looked cheesy.
I couldn't, I wouldn't even say cheesy, but I did hear feedback that it did look cheesy. But
yeah.
My only take is watching on TV was I was ready for the game to go. Let's just get the game.
It was mostly late.
ESPN's fault, to be honest, with the scheduling. But if we're moving off the game, are we moving off the game?
Can we move off the game? I'd love to.
Real quick.
I also have a real quick. John.
Okay. So I was in my seat at 7 because I
thought... Two real quicks do not make an actual real quick.
So I was in my seat at 7 thinking the ceremony would begin around 7:15.
Mm-hmm.
And then, lo and behold, about 7...
Well, that's what they told 7, fans,
17,
right?
7:17. Oh, no. They're coming out for warm-ups.
Yeah. They tricked you. They do. I was like, man, why is the stadium so full for warm-ups? These people are rabid, right? But they told the fans to be in their seats at 7:15. It was just warm-ups.
And the only thing
they did was like they showed pictures of the players on the big screen, and everyone would cheer for them. And that was like what would happen. It was very strange.
Well, it's pretty much what they do every game. It's just there's more people in the stands,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, I agree.
And if we're talking about pregame ceremony, I've never been to Vegas, but on TV, the opener... The Kraken inaugural game the pregame ceremony they did for that, I was like, this is incredible. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just the on the ice, like the whole vibe of it, I thought was great. Actually, that was kind of better than the Stanley Cup celebration. But then again, I don't really care about the Stanley Cup in Vegas. Okay, my real quick. This is very quick.
All right.
I thought, you know, there was some discontent, I'd say, among some Kraken fans online that Ty Cartier was not in the lineup. But I thought Kyler Yamamoto looked pretty good in this one. I thought he added a little something on the power play. I thought he was a part of the power play that actually worked fairly well. Had some good zone entries, was good down by the net. And now the internet seems like it might get what it wants. I imagine Cartier is going to be in there against Nashville.
If Tanev can't go.
Yes.
Yeah. The internet wants what the internet wants.
Indeed.
All right. Excellent real quicks. That was a very, very long breakdown of the one official Kraken game that we've had to watch so far. Oh, we now move on to our segments. And our first segment is not on the show notes, but it's everyone's favorite segment.
Then we shouldn't talk about it.
Goalie Gear Corner! This is actually just a real quick goalie gear corner.
It's a real quick.
Philip Grubauer had new pads, like kind of out of nowhere. And they gave kind of Martin Jones from last year vibes. They're just a clean white with the various Kraken colors going down the outside rolls. And we first saw them at morning skate day of. So I don't know how long he's been like trying to break those in or whatever. I don't think very long. Now, I think with the new pads, you don't really have to break them in too much. Like, they're the same specs as the ones he's probably been using. But I was surprised to see a brand new set of gear just ready for him for day one when he went all the way through preseason.
I wonder what the story is behind this.
If only somebody could ask those questions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I will. We'll see.
Do you know anybody?
I know a guy that knows a guy that could ask about it. The next segment is John's favorite segment. I don't know where it ranks on your favorite segments.
It's up there,
Curtis. Bad Boys. This one is Kraken related. Brett Howden got suspended for 2 games, so now we're back to the game in Vegas.
We can't get away from Vegas.
Get me out of Vegas.
I think we've pretty much talked about it, right? Are we good here? The principal point of contact was definitely the head. He hit him with his shoulder to the chin.
Yeah, I think a suspension's the right call. Yeah. I mean, you want to take those hits out.
So. Yep, I agree. And Tanev got hurt on the play. So. Yep. Our next bad boys is Arthur Kaliev, also got suspended 2 games for kneeing Chase DeLeo.
This was a preseason game.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't it 2 preseason and 2 regular season?
I just saw 2 games.
Okay. And it almost seemed like not premeditated, but it was like done out of anger because he had just gotten leveled and he got up and like went. And
there was specific intent.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like a, oops, I hit him with my knee. It was like a,
premeditated. That's what I'm
there
looking
you go.
For. Yeah. Thanks.
Didn't I just say that? Good.
He said specific intent.
Did I?
Yeah. Premeditated is the legal term. That's why I looked over there.
There's a lot of legal jargon going around
here.
It's
a good
right
thing
now.
We have a legal person.
Know. I'm also realizing that I can't remember what I ate for dinner tonight. So.
Oh boy.
Those are our bad boys. We now move on to our newly named NHL Around the Boards, where we're going to talk about some of the NHL topics. And it's just a slightly better title than Around the Horn of the NHL or whatever I called it last week. Where we're going to talk about some topics a little more in depth. Like these are the kinds of topics that deserve just
more
a bit
a
more than a weekly one timer. Yeah. So Connor Bedard played his first game and people were really excited about it. And, I guess he's pretty good. He did look pretty good. And now he's played 2 games and he's got a goal and an assist, correct?
Yep. Point per game player. Yes.
And who won that game? It was Chicago against Boston, Curtis?
Correct.
What was the outcome?
I think it was 3-1 Boston. I think he might have had their only goal.
Okay. So Chicago's not going undefeated?
They are not. It was 3-1 Boston. Okay. They're not, but he looks good. I mean, 17 shots across 2 games. I mean, none of them cheap. I mean, his speed and skill plays. It just does.
And he got a little welcome from Marshawn.
He did.
That was pretty nice.
He's the captain of the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, very responsible guy.
He's got to welcome him.
Marshawn drew Bedard's first penalty, too. Oh. Did you see that? Kind of goaded him into a little tripping call. That was nice.
Oh, wow.
I do. This is also kind of a get off my lawn, but what's he doing warming up without a helmet? Because I thought that was banned for players of his age at this point. Isn't that a new rule that just got instituted? And also,
you are the preeminent source on this.
Yeah. That's the only source. I will say, it's odd to me though, because when we read that rule from the rule book, it just said like players have to wear helmets. How do they enforce that?
I think suspension. I think you got
I think fine. I think kick him out. Kick him out of the league.
No, I think he should be he should be gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the only way you got to put your foot down.
If you don't make an example out of you have to.
So. Kevin Korchinski, Seattle Thunderbird, did a no bucket warm up that same day for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Are they doing laps? And then, because Shane Wright, I think, did a lap, and then I think he put his, or did he warm up without a bucket last year?
I can't remember, but I know with Connor Bedard, he did a lap without it, uh-huh. and then he did warm ups without it.
Without it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and tonight in the Kings game, Alex Laferriere made his debut and did the same thing, no bucket warm-up. So maybe the rookies are standing up for the rights of no bucket warm-ups.
Rookie labor.
Wow.
Rookie labor movement.
That's an interesting theory. There's some pushback here from
I think we need
or maybe the veterans are making them do it. They're right. Like, you're going to get fined, but
we need investigative piece here from Darren Brown.
Okay. Cartier still hasn't played his first
regular season
game. So I wonder if he'll get the lap.
I don't think so.
Do you think he'll get the lap?
I don't think he will. Because he played NHL playoffs.
But like they didn't give him a lap in the playoffs, right?
They did not? I thought they did.
I don't know. That's
whatever. The Pride Tape conversation. John?
Here we go.
Moral compass. I'm gonna look to you to guide us on this journey through the conversation that is the NHL banning players from any kind of... I'll just let you explain.
Yeah, okay.
Why don't you just go ahead?
So let's go back this earlier this summer where the NHL said they would no longer have specialty jerseys to be worn for warm-ups. Hockey Fights Cancer, Veterans, Pride Night, Seattle does Lunar New Year. They do Green Night. They do the green jerseys.
Yeah, Kraken were calling them Hife Nights, Hockey is for Everyone Nights, which I don't know what that, if that's what everybody was calling them, but that's what
I don't know either, but that's definitely what they call them.
Yeah. So,
a lot of this really drums up from seven players refusing to wear a specific jersey, the Pride jersey.
The Pride jersey,
right? Yeah. So the league kind of issued a memo or whatever that said, hey, you can't wear these anymore or whatever. And it was very confusing, it was not very clear what the rules are around that. And a lot of the teams kind of inquired about that, including the Seattle Kraken, said, we need more clarity. Like, what does this mean? And there's a lot of teams that weren't happy about it. Also kind of raised some issues.
Yeah, knowing what we know about the Kraken and how much pride they take in Pride Nights, no pun intended.
Yeah, and things all the like hype that, nights, all of, absolutely, right? Yeah, yes. But this really comes down to because of the Pride scenarios.
Yes,
and
100%.
The actions of seven players refusing to wear them. Late last week, the NHL issued a clarifying memo about it. And in there, they're not allowed to use Pride tape for warmups either. And it's created quite a stir, rightfully so, from fans, for one. And then a couple other media members have started talking to the players, and the players are coming out and saying, well, I'm going to wear it anyway. Mm-hmm. Scott Laughlin being one of them. Mm. Morgan Riley in Toronto also kind of came out. It's pretty lame. Like, I don't know the specifics. If you want to read some articles, Katie Strang is probably doing the best job covering this in a somewhat neutral position. And then there's also talk that there's hope that there's enough pushback from the players and hopefully some of the teams. And we know there's pushback from some of the teams. I shouldn't say there's pushback. There's concerns from the teams. There will still be Pride Nights. That's be clear. And there'll still be like Hockey Fights Cancer Nights. It's just specific around teams cannot require the players to do a lot of things. But if they're into the cause or want to support certain things, they can still do that. So they don't think that that's going away. But even Brian Burke kind of issued a big statement saying it's a step back and it hurts people and theoretically endangers people's lives, because having support and allies is really important for people that are in tough spots, and to see that by famous people adds value and gives people hope sometimes.
Well, especially because I think that, I don't know, I think about the Kraken specifically, right? And like the Kraken organization is way more progressive than I would argue every other hockey team, NHL hockey team. Maybe there's one or two that are, you know, in the same ballpark as them. But, you know, when they can get all of their players to come out and support this cause and just say, hey, you know, they're not saying anything other than we support this cause, and that's all it is, you know, and it's a really small gesture, and it's 15 minutes of wearing a jersey and putting tape on your stick that's different from what you normally do, just to say, hey, you're welcome to come here, we want to have you here as a fan, and we support you as a human, you know, it's a really small gesture, it really is. So to have it get derailed because, you know, seven people decided that they didn't want to participate, it's just like, I think just don't have those people participate, like let them choose. But I also kind of get where it's coming from, because then those players do get singled out. So I kind of see the other side of it, but it feels like too big of a decision to say, okay, well, these seven people had an issue with it, so now we're going to take it away from everybody. That seems wrong to me.
Yeah, it just seems like way too risk averse a move by the league to me, because it seems like they saw that the situation with these players became such a big deal, and they just didn't want to have that happen again.
Yeah.
And what they knew was not a risk, which I think is a true shame, is they knew it was not a risk that the star players were going to come out and make this a problem on the other side. Like, I think Connor McDavid, when he was interviewed, said the right things in a sense, but I watched the interview, and it was like the only thing he was truly upset about was that he was being interviewed. The man does not want to be interviewed. He doesn't want to be the leader of a cause like this. He doesn't want to be out. You know, he's not the equivalent of someone like LeBron James. If there was a figure like that in the NHL who could kind of like make it as painful for the league on the other side for going in this direction, I don't think we'd be in this spot. Mm. But there isn't that leadership among the players right now. And I think that's a shame. I wish there was
and
more.
I think, there, to your point, like there are some players that are incredibly outspoken and supportive of this kind of cause. And it's not just Pride, right? It's the other causes too. There's so many things in the world that people need to be supported on. And
But to your point, yeah, it's not like the best players are not necessarily the biggest personalities or the ones that want to be leaders on these particular topics.
I just think if the league office was worried that they'd have a group of the five best NHL players and a revolt against them, they wouldn't have done this.
Right.
And that just hasn't happened.
Here's an idea. Were they, like, how specific were they with banning things, John? Because maybe we do like a colorful spray paint in the hair for some of the players.
Oh man.
And they do a no bucket warm-up.
It specifically said tape, right?
So
they're clearly not policing the no bucket warm-up.
Right.
So yes.
Maybe they wear like a rainbow colored headband during their, you know, or a bandana or something like that. Or a hat. What about a hat?
These are good ideas.
I mean, we'll see.
There's some loopholes. There's some potential loopholes in this. So just floating that out there for folks.
It's a crummy one, though.
It is a crummy one. Our other headline that we want to talk about, and this one's also a crummy one, Barry Melrose is stepping away. He's officially retiring, I guess, from covering hockey. He's been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, so he's going to be spending a lot more time with his family. He is a friend of the pod. He's a Seattle Thunderbirds former coach. He's been a big, big part of my life, that's for sure. You know, just thinking back to watching him on like NHL two nights when it was the number two. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's a sad situation there.
I listened to something that Jeff Merrick's radio show today and Greg Wyshynski was on. And Wyshynski said some pretty cool stuff about Barry Melrose, about how he really kind of bridged the times when the NHL was off ESPN, right? He was a huge...
He was the only hockey guy they had.
Yeah, and he would, like, anytime there was, like, something significant in the hockey world that they'd reach out to Barry, Barry would come on set, and he deserves a lot of credit. And Wyshynski talked about how, you know, Barry was kind of the equivalent of Don Cherry in Canada and had that kind of significant of a personality in the hockey world in a time when hockey wasn't as popular as it is now, or just kind of the bridge, right? Particularly in the Versus time, I think about. And Greg also talked about how welcoming he was when him and Emily joined ESPN, because that was like kind of an awkward time for ESPN as well, because they had just laid off like Pierre LeBrun and a bunch of those traditional really good writers and journalists. Mm-hmm. But it made me think about how willing he was to come on our podcast as well.
Yeah.
Which is pretty insane when you think about it. I mean, that he made time for us at a time where we didn't have a team at the time, right? Yeah. Like, so he's just jumping on a Seattle hockey podcast. It's pretty incredible. So it sucks, but we'll have to see where it goes. But I love seeing the support for him too, right? And he was kind of a big part in my NHL journey, right? Because when the Kings played in the Stanley Cup Finals, that's when I was like really, I started to really get was really hooking me in.
Best of luck to Barry Melrose and his family, wishing them nothing but the best and lots of happy times together now. So we're going to move on to our weekly one-timers. Just a couple of real quicks here. The first one is our first weekly one-timer. Pyotr Kochetkov has been loaned to the Syracuse Crunch, which is interesting because the Syracuse Crunch are the Tampa Bay Lightning's affiliate. Pyotr Kochetkov plays for the Carolina Hurricanes. Isn't that odd? Yeah. So apparently the Hurricanes, do they not have an affiliate?
No.
Or they don't have?
No,
there's
don't.
No affiliate whatsoever?
No, because remember they were with Chicago Wolves?
Yeah.
And then the Chicago Wolves were going independent.
Okay.
Purely
that's
independent.
Right. Yeah. So where are they putting their prospects?
All over the place. There's some in Colorado, the Colorado Eagles, and they have different relationships.
And they're sending some to their ECHL affiliated team. Yeah, it's not a good situation.
I didn't know anything about that.
We've loosely talked about it, but we've just never kind of tied it all together.
Our other weekly one-timer.
I wasn't listening.
Yeah. I just move on. Two big signings in Buffalo. Rasmus Dahlin gets a big ticket at 8 years, $11 million AAV. And Owen Power gets also 8 years, $8.35 million. So why is that interesting to you, Curtis?
Well, obviously because the Dahlin contract makes the Charlie McAvoy deal in Boston look pretty good.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. that's true, though. But the Owen Power contract, 8 times 8.35 is in the neighborhood of what we were thinking as a potential Matty Beniers extension, which is interesting because the two of them went 1-2 overall, Michigan right. teammates. You got to believe that Matty Beniers is pretty well acquainted with how Owen Power ended up at 8 times 8.35 and might be interested in something similar.
Right. Well, and in theory, Matty probably has a little bit more negotiating power because he won the Rookie of the Year. Wouldn't you think?
You could make that case.
I think there's some comparables probably in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, they play different positions and yeah. they're very different players, but I would not be surprised if his agents were making that case, for right. example. Right. But I think that a Matty Beniers 8-year extension, if that's what we're talking about, this is the right range.
Okay. Those are our weekly one-timers. We close the show with our tweets, our X's of the week. X's of the week, that doesn't sound good.
No, we're going to have to yeah. stick with tweets of the week or All right. come up with something else.
Mine is not really so much that it's like a funny tweet other than, so Rob Williams, Rob the hockey guy, who I think I just had him as a tweet of the week recently. It just says, the Canucks have a new slogan, and the new slogan is, come on, let's go. That's their slogan for this year.
Yeah. Makes sense. Come on.
Let's go.
Why not?
Like, are you ready yet? Come on. Let's go.
Motivational speaking at its best.
Yeah. Curtis, your tweet of the week?
Yeah. I think I'm now realizing my tweet of the week is just my favorite Pete Blackburn tweet of the week. But here we are.
Every week. Yeah.
So Pete Blackburn had this one. This was after the first game between the Penguins and the Blackhawks, where the Penguins were up 2-0, ended up losing 4-2, mm-hmm. Three unanswered goals in the third period. He says, half the Penguins roster is AARP eligible. I should have known they'd fall asleep in the third period.
Ayo. I thought
that was pretty good.
That was pretty good. John?
Mine comes from the San Jose Sharks.
Okay.
It says, happy National Coming Out Day with a rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
Says today and every day we're celebrating and standing with our LGBTQ plus hockey family wherever they are at in their coming back journey. And it's got pictures of rainbow themed Sharks logos and stuff, so I thought that was pretty good.
Well done.
Yeah, that
yeah.
is good.
Yeah, very timely. I love that. And well done for you, John, by taking the lead on that conversation, which is always an awkward
one. It's fluid still.
Yeah. Still fluid. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
I don't think we're done talking. I mean,
yeah, I don't think so either. I think there's more to come on that.
Hopefully we're not done.
And hopefully, yes, to your point, the pushback is going to work, but we'll see. That is episode 256. We went a little bit long here, considering I would have liked for it to only go about 15 minutes. And then
we have a mailbag.
Yes, which we for you now patrons. Need to record yeah. for our patrons. So subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on Pocket Casts. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on next week's show. Thank you again to I am Dave Haxtell's Steely Gaze or whatever you changed your name to on the we will talk to you all very soon for episode 257. Cheers.